Chapter 10. Tecumseh and His Prophet Brother. In the year 1771, in an Indian village near the Miami River in Ohio, there lived an Indian boy named Tecumseh, which means a shooting star. He spent his time swimming in the river during the warm days, playing with the other boys, or shooting with his bow and arrow. In the winter, he set traps to catch small animals in the forest, and sometimes he went hunting with his older brother. This brother wished to make a great warrior of him. The boy soon became a leader among his playmates, and as he grew older, he showed great courage and skill, both in hunting and in war. As he sat with the warriors and braves about the campfire, he heard many stories of the white people and of their greed for the Indians' land. He heard them tell of the broken-hearted Indians who had been driven away from their homes and of the unjust treatment of the whites. Every year Tecumseh became stronger and a better hunter. He had piercing black eyes and always wore a plain dress of deerskin, not being fond of gaudy colors. Tecumseh soon became the best hunter of his tribe. Three young braves once came to him and boasted that they could kill as many deer in 3 days as he could. He accepted the challenge, and after 3 days they all returned. The three braves had killed only 12, but Tecumseh brought in more than twice as many. He was very generous and gave most of the game he captured to those not able to hunt for themselves. If there was an old Indian whose wigwam needed mending, it was Tecumseh who patched it. If there was a widow in need, it was Tecumseh who laid food at her door. A traveler from Kentucky stopped one night at the home of a white settler near Tecumseh's village. He intended to explore the lands. He was very much surprised to learn that Indians were so near. While they were talking, the door suddenly opened and in walked the dignified Tecumseh. The Kentuckian was frightened, and Tecumseh noticed it and, looking at him a moment, said in a contemptuous tone, "A big baby, a big baby." Tecumseh's heart was filled with love for his people. He had for years been watching the advance of the white men, and it was with troubled eyes that he saw his own people compelled to withdraw farther and farther from their former hunting grounds. The more he thought about it, the clearer he saw that soon the white people would fill the country, and the Indians, once so powerful, would be driven out. At this time, there were just 17 states, and Tecumseh thought if it was a good thing for the white people to join together to help each other, it would be a good thing for all the Indian tribes to unite for the protection of their homes. He began to prepare for a great war in which all of the Indians would join together and drive the white people out of the country. He and his brother visited the tribes in the north, the west, and the south, traveling many miles over hills and valleys and through the dark and lonely forests. In the south, he called a great council and told them he had come from the far distant Great Lakes to urge them to go on the warpath and drive the white man either into the sea or to the land from which he came. Tecumseh's brother had heard from the English that a comet would appear soon. He said, "You will see the arm of Tecumseh like a pale fire stretched out in the heaven, and at that time the war will begin." One chief was friendly to the white people and would not promise, but shook his head. Tecumseh tried hard to persuade him, but all in vain. At last he said, "Your blood is white. You do not mean to fight. I know the reason. You do not believe the Great Spirit sent me. You shall believe it. I will go straight to Detroit. When I get there, I will stamp my foot on the ground and shake down every house in your village." Sure enough, the comet appeared, and the Indians said, "It is Tecumseh's arm." Then there came an earthquake, and the Indians ran out of their huts, crying, "Tecumseh is at Detroit. We feel the stamp of his foot." Then they all prepared to help in the war. Tecumseh's home was no longer on the Miami River, but far to the west at Tippecanoe, on a branch of the Wabash. When he returned home, he found that several tribes had signed a treaty giving to the government a large tract of land. He was filled with rage and declared that he would never allow it to be surveyed. General Harrison was in command of the white soldiers, and hearing of Tecumseh's anger, sent for him to come and present his claim. So one hot day in August, 1811, Tecumseh, with several hundred warriors, went to Vincennes, which was the headquarters of the army. He made a long speech, and after it, found himself without a seat. Observing the neglect, the general directed a chair to be placed for him. "Your father," said the interpreter, "requests you to take a chair." "My father," replied the chief, "the sun is my father, and the earth is my mother. I will repose on her bosom." And he proudly drew his blanket about him and sat down on the ground. The meeting was very exciting, for the Indians were angry and determined. It looked for a while as though war might break out at any moment. The next day the Indians were somewhat calmer, but General Harrison saw that war would come in spite of all his efforts to prevent it. Tecumseh hurried away to see other tribes, leaving bundles of red sticks at each village, telling them to throw away one every day until they were all gone. Then they were to fall upon the white people and kill them all. General Harrison concluded that if war must come, he would begin it himself. He marched to Tippecanoe and, after a hard battle with the Indians, succeeded in driving them away and capturing the village. When Tecumseh returned, he found his home in ashes, his warriors driven away or killed, and his brother, whom he had left in command, defeated and missing. Tecumseh now gave up all hope. In 1812, the United States had another war with England, and Tecumseh entered the English army. He fought under General Proctor, who was a very cruel soldier. One day, a number of Harrison's men had been captured, and some of the Indians were torturing them and soon would have killed them. Tecumseh, seeing what was going on, sprang from his horse and rushed upon these Indians and threw them to the ground. "Why do you allow this?" he asked indignantly of General Proctor. "Your Indians cannot be controlled," said General Proctor. "Begone," said Tecumseh. "You are unfit to command. Go and put on petticoats." One day there came a heavy battle on the River Thames in Canada. In the thick of the fight, General Proctor ran away, but the brave Tecumseh died there, fighting for his adopted country, the foe of the United States. So ended the life of this great chief. Many of our geographical names are from the Indian language. Here are a few of our commonest. Illinois, after a tribe of Indians. Ohio means beautiful river. Kentucky, at the head of the river. Niagara, the neck. Mississippi, great water. Missouri, muddy water. Massachusetts, the great hill country. Idaho, Sunrise Mountain. Michigan, Big Lake. Chesapeake, great water. Dakota, after a tribe. Minnesota, cloudy water. Tecumseh's brother, the prophet. Tecumseh had not been alone in his anxiety for the future of his race. After the death of his elder brother, he had made his twin brother, Laulewasikaw, his trusted comrade. Together they had talked over the decay in power and manliness that was swiftly overtaking the tribes, and the wrongs the red men suffered at the hands of the white. They had not spent their strength in useless murmurings, but had analyzed the causes of trouble and decided how they might be removed. One day, after brooding deeply over these matters, Laulewasikaw fell upon the earth in a swoon. For a long time he lay quite stiff and rigid, and those who saw him thought he was dead. But by and by he gave a deep moan and opened his eyes. For a moment he looked about as if he did not know where he was. On coming to his senses, he explained to his friends that he had had a vision in which he had seen the Great Spirit, who had told him what to do to save the Indian people from destruction. From that time he styled himself Prophet, and claimed to act under the direction of the Great Spirit. He changed his name to Tenskwatawa, to signify that he was the open door through which all might learn the will of the Great Spirit. Many of the prophet's teachings were such as we would all approve of. Wishing to purify the individual and family life of the Indians, he forbade men to marry more than one wife and commanded them to take care of their families and to provide for those who were old and sick. He required them to work, to till the ground and raise corn, and to hunt. Some of his teachings were intended to make the Indians, as a people, independent of the white race. The Great Spirit, said Tenskwatawa, had made the Indians to be a single people, quite distinct from the white men, and for different purposes. The tribes must therefore stop fighting with one another, and must unite and live peaceably together as one tribe. They must not fight with the white men, either Americans or British. Neither must they intermarry with them or adopt their customs. Furthermore, Tenskwatawa taught the Indians that a tribe had no right to sell the land it lived on. The Great Spirit had given the red people the land, that they might enjoy it in common, just as they did the light and the air. He did not wish them to measure it off and build fences around it. Since no one chief or tribe owned the land, no single chief or tribe could sell it. No Indian territory, therefore, could be sold to the white men without the consent of all tribes and all Indians. The words of the prophet were eagerly listened to. Indians came from far and near to hear him. Some were so excited by what he said against witchcraft that they put to death those who persisted in using charms and pronouncing incantations. The sayings and doings of the Shawnee prophet soon attracted the attention of the governor of Indiana Territory. Pity for the victims of the prophet's misguided zeal and alarm because of the influence Tenskwatawa seemed to be gaining led Governor William Henry Harrison to take measures to check the popularity of a man who seemed to be a fraud and a mischief maker. He sent to the Delaware Indians the following speech. "My children, my heart is filled with grief and my eyes are dissolved in tears at the news which has reached me. Who is this pretended prophet who dares to speak in the name of the great Creator? Examine him. Is he more wise and virtuous than you are yourselves, that he should be selected to convey to you the orders of your God? Demand of him some proofs, at least of his being the messengers of the deity. If God has really employed him, he has doubtless authorized him to perform miracles, that he may be known and received as a prophet. If he really is a prophet, ask him to cause the sun to stand still, the moon to alter its course, the rivers to cease to flow, or the dead to rise from their graves. If he does these things, you may believe that he has been sent from God. He tells you that the Great Spirit commands you to punish with death those who deal in magic, and that he is authorized to point them out? Wretched delusion! Is then the Master of Life obliged to employ mortal man to punish those who offend him? Clear your eyes, I beseech you, from the mist which surrounds them. No longer be imposed on by the arts of the impostor. Drive him from your town and let peace and harmony prevail amongst you." This letter increased rather than diminished the influence of the prophet. He met the governor's doubt of his power with fine scorn and named a day on which he would put the sun under his feet. Strange to say, on the day named, an eclipse of the sun occurred, and the affrighted Indians quaked with fear and thought it was all the work of Tenskwatawa.